There is a lot in the Bible that I cannot relate to. Analogies I don't all the way get, cultural practices that seem arcane to me, religious rituals that are of a different era. I've never met a Roman centurion. I've never participated in ritual animal sacrifice. Now, I watched that show, The Crown, and I find myself yelling at the screen, but like she wasn't even elected. I can't imagine living under a sovereign that has real power, not just a great wardrobe. That's the thing about having a sacred text that's so old. Some things have changed in the last 2,000 years, and it can be hard to relate to. Until you get to Romans 7, and then it hits you. The thing that has not changed is the human condition. Parts of the Bible can feel hard to relate to until you get to that section. I don't understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the thing I hate. I can will what's right, but I can't do it. For I don't do the good I want, but the evil I don't want to do, that's what I do. I feel like he's writing about me. And doesn't this passage speak to where many of us are right about now with our New Year's resolutions? Like, I really, really, really wanted to eat a more colorful plate, and I am back to red meat or white meat. Like, that's the color of my plate right now. Maybe you've tried the same, you know, to avoid something bad or add something good, to try really hard to be a different and better person, because it's the new year, and new year brings new promise and hope for being the person that we really, really want to be. So I have some good news for you. Lent is just around the corner, so you get another shot. But the Bible promises us something different. The Bible promises us a new peace, a peace that comes when we turn away from ourselves and our own willpower and our own moral rectitude towards God and the work of Jesus. A central premise of the Bible is that there's a difference between a morally constrained heart and a supernaturally changed heart. That there's a difference between suppressing the natural through willpower and seeing it permanently changed by the power of the Holy Spirit. And it's through this changed heart that we can come to a new peace. A peace which is independent of circumstance, a peace that is rooted in the protective power of God. Let's look at each of the scriptures that Brian read so that we can understand a little bit more about the circumstances we find ourselves in and the nature of the peace we seek and how we might begin to experience it. I find the Romans passage to be really empathic. Paul's problem, like our problem, is not a lack of desire. It's not a lack of want. He wants to do what's right. We want to do what's right. It's really a lack of power, right? The issue is we as humans, we don't have the sufficient power to fight off the forces of evil that is characteristic of our humanity. And he is exhausted. This internal effort to live a life that's morally upright through his own will is tiring. He cries out in verse 24, "Wretched man that I am." And wretched in this sense is not only sort of emotional turmoil, but it also implies exhaustion from hard labor. Anyone else here ever have physical manifestations of their stress? You know, get hives or can't sleep or catch colds? Or is it just me? Is it just me? In this moment of physical and emotional exhaustion, he cries out, "Who can deliver me?" Paul finally turns to something outside of himself. In that passage that Brian read, he refers to himself 40 times. 40 times. In his struggle, he has become self-focused and self-obsessed. How many of us in despair and in trouble and worry forget, at least for a moment, we forget to turn to the Lord for help? How many of us try to fix it ourselves first rather than to rely to try to rely on our own personal performance and resources rather than looking first to Jesus for his light and guidance. Let's move to Ephesians for a perspective on what the peace on the peace that can come from God through Jesus Christ. Have you all heard of an app? I've just learned about it. Maybe I'm the last one to learn about it. Have you heard about this app called YouVersion? YouVersion? It's a mobile app. It's the app that is related to Bible.com, right? So if you ever look online and to Bible.com and look up your verses, YouVersion is the mobile app. And I think the people here are probably the only ones who haven't heard of YouVersion because it's been downloaded 200 million times. So a lot of people use this app. And the thing about apps is the app owners track what people are doing on their applications. And in 2014, they published, YouVersion published the most popular lookups on their application. What were the verses that people looked up? And they are not about God's love. They are not about forgiveness. They're not about justice. They're not about power. The top five most popular verses encourage people not to be afraid or anxious because God will strengthen them. They are Philippians 4:13. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Isaiah 40:31. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. Matthew 6:13. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Joshua 1:9. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Philippians 4:6, do not be anxious about anything. We are an anxious and a worried lot. But what does this peace of God look like? What is it that all of these people who are looking up scriptures, what are we looking for? Well, the good and the bad news is that Paul describes it as a peace beyond all understanding. This is not something that we're easily going to be able to explain, but more that we can experience. A few verses later, Paul writes, I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed and going hungry, of having plenty and being in need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I think this is interesting, in particular the sense of peace, both in the good times and in the bad times. It's an equilibrium, a poise in every circumstance. When things seem to be going well, there's the same peace as when things are not going as well. I think many of us have met Christians that we think, you know, they have that peace. These are the people who seem protected, who seem unperturbed, even in some of the worst circumstances, and not overly euphoric in the best times. They're not Pollyannas who wish or ignore these circumstances. Their peace is independent of them. I want that. I want that more than the ability to keep my New Year's resolutions and eat a more colorful variety of food. I want it more than I want a fulfilling job. I want it more than I want a great result in my next tournament. I want it more than I want a deeper relationship with my husband. I want it more than I want a vibrant congregation here. I want the peace of God. And I have a feeling that the greater the experience of the peace of God, the less urgent and gnawing and persistent my worry about those other things will be. Oh, wretched woman that I am. So clearly, I'm not an expert on how to get the peace of God. Indeed, Paul describes it as a secret. I've learned the secret of how to be well-fed and how to go hungry. The peace of God, I don't think, is common, and it's not common knowledge. But Paul does give us some pointers about how to come by it. Paul learned to have this peace. He says it. I've learned the secret. He doesn't say, I was born with it. You know, some folks got it, some folks don't. It's a miracle. He doesn't even say, you know that story I told you about when I was walking on the road to Damascus and I'm struck blind? It happened then. He says, I learned it. And like all things that we learn, it takes discipline and time. He lets us in on two of those disciplines. It requires thanking and thinking. First, let's look at thanking. Philippians 4:6 says, don't worry about anything. Don't worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. These are not separate thoughts. The sentence isn't, don't worry, period. Be thankful, period. Don't worry, but be thankful. Many of you know that I play squash. I love to compete in matches. I love going to tournaments. I love competing with my friends. And I've worked with a coach for many years. He and I rarely play points. We don't play games with one another. We drill, and we drill hard. We will do the same shot, you know, we'll hit the same shot 25 or 30 times in a row. He pushes me until I think my lungs are going to give out, and if my lungs don't give out, then my legs will give out. It's rare that I work that hard in an actual match, and I never play a match where I have to hit the same shot 20 or 30 times in a row. So why do we do that? Why do we do that? It's so that I have the evidence in my mind, I have the confidence in my mind that I can hit the one or two or three that I have to hit in a match. If I can hit the 25, then I can hit the three. I think the same phenomena is going on here in Ephesians. Give thanks for the 25 or 30 times that God's put food on your table, and you will have all the evidence that you need that he'll put food on your table tomorrow without being torn up with worry. You can tell yourself, don't worry, God will provide. This takes discipline. The work that you put into the Thanksgiving part is what pays off when you get to those times in life when you really need the don't worry part. The other tactic that Paul offers is thinking. He says in Philippians 4:8, finally, beloved, whatever's true, whatever's honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. The thinking part may be as hard as the thanking part, especially in this day and age. You know, I'm embarrassed to tell you how many times I checked email or the news or did some like quick online shopping or did a little bit of transition committee work as I was working on this sermon. It's hard, especially in the internet era, to keep our minds focused on what Paul exhorts us to focus on. There's the old newspaper adage that to get viewers' attention, if it bleeds, it leads, right? And of course, there's been a lot of discussion. We've had these discussions here at Oakton about how mobile devices have a sort of addictive nature, right? The color, the noises, the information we get in them all work to stimulate the limbic system to make us want more, more, more. I got a new phone in December, and I have spent countless hours trying to get that thing to stop beeping and whirring and blooping at me. I'm coining a new phrase right here. If it rings, it brings. Okay, it's not as snappy as if it bleeds, it leads. But you get the idea, right? We are constantly drawn. And what we're drawn to isn't what's true and honorable and just. It is too often what is profitable, what is expedient, and what is worldly. I'm not sure that willpower is going to do much more good for us when it comes to thought distractions than it is when it comes to diet and exercise. But unlike our refrigerators, we can work with our devices to help us reject the temptation to click or to swipe. So if we want this peace, there's still a role for will. There's still a role for willpower. But it's not willpower to be what we want to be, but to exercise the disciplines that Paul has laid out for us that move us towards having this peace. If we want the joy, regardless of circumstance, we need to commit to the daily discipline of thinking and thanking. The disciplines for the training and the renewing of our minds so that we will be able to test and approve God's will, his good and pleasing and perfect will. Amen.